Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of five-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to score five-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up. Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court strike.
Ford sends it to Curry. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fadeaway. Yes!
Giants for the win. Bang!
James puts up the three.
Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. With 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, and today we continue with part two of our draft preview with Mike Garcia. Mike, how you doing?
Pretty well, man. How's it going?
I'm good. Looking forward to talking about second round picks and sleepers. This is something that, of all the things you're phenomenal at with the draft, I think this is right at or near the top, is your ability to find dudes in the second round. As we record this, Miles McBride is playing for the Knicks in the rotation on a finals team and was the dude that you were into. Just many, many second rounders over the years. And so very excited to get into this with you. Mike, the Lakers don't currently have a second round pick. And I would love just to get a temperature check on your level of enthusiasm for the Lakers maybe buying into the second round.
I would anticipate the Lakers buying into the second round. I listen to your pod all the time, but the thing that's always mentioned is, oh, we're going to try to win on the margins, right? And those margins are, oh, we need to buy a pick, or we need to find somebody in the undrafted market. Oh, here's Goodwin. Oh, we found Austin Reeves. Oh, we bought a pick. Oh, I don't think that pick is good enough. Let's trade it and buy again, and let's go get Thero because we think he's going to be something down the line. So these are the margins that I personally kind of get excited for. Like, it's a really difficult challenge. This year, specifically because I think the center talent also leans all the way to the mid-second, I think there's talent to be found. I wouldn't say they're immediate contributors, but I would say, well, it's not South Bay anymore. It's the Coachella Valley Lakers. If you wanted to develop a guy over there and have a very exciting team and say, hey, this guy is on a second-round contract or he's on a two-way, but we need somebody to come in for the parent team because he can do these one or two specific things, and that'd be great. That would be one of the goals I would find out of the second round for this particular year. And there's quite a few guys available at that area.
So who would you like to start with?
One player that I put at the top of my second round list is Ugonna Onyensa. It's really hard to say his name. He's out of Virginia. I believe Tony Bennett may have familiarity with him because of the Virginia connection and maybe possibly recruiting him. What makes Onyensa really special is that while he's 6'11 without shoes, and then he's just under 7'5 for a wingspan, so his standing reach is 9'5. Now, that to put that in context, that's like having a 9'5 standing reach is comparable to a center that's typically 7'2 or 7'3, and then sticks out their arm, and then it's like, oh, I'm this height too. What makes him unique is his block percentage is 17%.
I'm sorry. What did you just say? His block percentage, 17.17. They're not a decimal in between.
It's actually, I mean, it's a little bit over 17%, but it's 17%. So, of course,
I've never heard
the game tape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So I go into the game tape and I'm like, okay, I would be thinking, oh, this guy must be a super aerial leaper, like jump in at the top of the backboard square. No. What makes this guy special is he gets block shots at the release point, kind of like Allen Graves, but he also does it with power. At the combine, he was listed around 236 pounds, but he plays stronger than that in terms of post defense. So now I'm looking at two very specific things. Okay, he's got this insane reach and he's got this ability to block. I wouldn't say he's a super amazing rebounder, but he's good, right? Okay. What stood out this year specifically was against Duke, he had 9 block shots against Duke. Duke is stacked. That's just an NBA team, right? But more specifically than that, Cameron Boozer went up against him 1v1 in the post, I think 2 or 3 different times. And each time it was, he stayed on the floor. He didn't, like, Boozer tried to back him down. He held his ground. Like, he didn't really give much ground, period. And then when Boozer tried to get a shot, it was at the release point, block. At the release point, altered. Forcing Boozer to fade. Okay. Now I'm thinking, okay, well, what if the players I liked that was in the undrafted class last year was Dylan Cardwell? What's it? Lanky, 7-foot-plus center, long arms again. But what he does, one thing, he blocks shots. And I think he had a game-winning block last year. Great. Onyensa could be exactly this kind of prototype. And the fact that there's familiarity with Virginia's defensive schemes and then how he defends, it's like, oh, I can see this guy playing a shift or two because I know exactly what this guy does. I don't want to put him in a decision-making, you know, part of the offense. But, hey, he can reach and go get rim-level lobs. Great. Because we watch Jackson, and Jackson's like, okay, well, oh, the lob's 12 feet up. I'm going to go get it, and it'll be fine. I wish it was the same defensively. We actually want him to stay more grounded to prevent fouls.
Yes.
And now here's this guy who's like, oh, he's grounded, and he gets the timing blocks, and maybe he's not the lob threat, but we need an anchor, and if we can't get a starting anchor, can we get a bench anchor? And here's this guy.
Yeah.
So that's Onyensa for me.
Love that. Let's continue down this path of these bigs in this range, Mike, that we haven't discussed already. Who's next up on our list?
One player that Laker fans have asked me a lot about is Trayvon Brazil. He's also from Arkansas. Arkansas gets a lot of stack teams. And what you would like about Trayvon Brazil is he really is that dude in terms of athleticism. When I talk about lob threat, it's always like, oh, rim level pass. Oh, he gets it by reach. Oh, he gets it by verticality. Well, Trayvon Brazil could do 12 foot high, top of the backboard kind of lob threat ability. And from the combine, he was listed at 6'9.5 without shoes. To me, that's kind of like Jackson Hayes-ish. And he's only like 225 pounds. But what makes him different, aside from being a lob threat, is he's been a mid-30s three-point shooter. And then I watch his form, and it's like, hey, the elbows are up, and it's kind of compact, and it's like one good motion. There isn't any hitches in the middle. His free throw percentage has floated around in the mid-60s percent, so I'm not all that optimistic. But at least it's this dual threat where, hey, if there's a Spain pick and roll, and yes, we want a big to dive, but what if we played a dual big lineup and this guy stretched to the floor too? Well, he's got an open shot above the break and he can actually hit that. And it's not this, oh, maybe he'll try to make it. No, he's made these shots before, right? He's had the reputation of doing it. He had an injury in Arkansas that I thought affected his athleticism. I think he had a torn ACL. I can't clarify that right now, but he recovered from that well. And defensively, I wouldn't say he's an anchor. But he's such an athlete that when I see him switched onto guards, it's rare to see a big kind of like back up and then laterally move, but like move too far. It's weird to say that, but he actually does it. And then he spaces a bit too much. And it's happened multiple times at the put, like, you know, he gets isolated at the top of the arc. But it's at the same time, it's, oh, he can keep up with all of these guys. He just needs the right technique to actually defend the shot well, right? He spaces a foot or two just too far because I think he's like, oh, I can explode up if I'm backing up and I'll just block it. And that's not the case. This is going to be the NBA level. But, oh, you were going to say?
How old is he?
I think he's 23.
Okay, so how do you factor something in like that, Mike, where you're talking about a guy where if he gets the right technique, if I'm drafting a 23-year-old, that's part of what I want. Now, obviously, there is development. I don't expect NBA-ready, like, 27-year-old type of maturity. But, you know, by a certain age, you should have that something like that down if you've got that type of athletic talent.
I totally agree. And that's why he's not listed as a lottery pick, because these are special skills. What you want him to do is just make his decisions very simple. He's at the corner and we want him to take the open corner three. Well, he didn't shoot it. Okay, well, his next pass is 10 feet away. That's his exit route. Okay, that's who he is on offense. No problem. If it's defense, it's not like he doesn't help. It's more like, well, his motor's maybe a little bit inconsistent, or maybe he'll be a touch late. And it's funny because even when he's late on rotation or late on a closeout, he's been so athletic, like he still challenges the shot. And I mentioned before about Coachella Valley, the Coachella Valley Lakers, and trying to get a rare archetype that the Lakers just can't get. This is one of those archetypes where, well, here's this big who's got kind of Jackson Hayes level explosion, and he has a 3-point shot. Well, maybe if he just refines those two things, and then he, like, he can really run the floor too.
Yeah.
You want to be a transition player, and then you want to optimize 3-point shooting, and you want a lot of threat. Here's this guy. The defense may be compromised a little bit. He's an okay rebounder. You know, I wouldn't say it's special, but in theory, he gives the option of playing a too big lineup because of that 3-point shot and that switchability.
With athleticism.
With the athleticism.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those shooters at the big spot can be sort of the less athletic guys that it's rare to be able to have both. Let's go to break here, Mike. Come back. Keep talking about the second round picks and sleepers.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of five-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to score five-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
All right, so who do you like to talk about next?
Let's go ahead and talk about Alex Caravan. The only reason why I would mention him is because he has so much experience playing in the collegiate tournament and then actually winning championships that, hey, he's a starter at this level. Here's a guy, he's 6'6", 3-quarter without shoes. He's just under 6'9" reach, and he's got 6'11" arms. But He's been a mid-30s percent shooter consistently throughout his collegiate career, and maybe he's not the fastest guy on the floor, but every time I watch him play in the tournament, you know how some players, they have an ability to level up kind of like athletically or being decisive, or they're just more crisp somehow and you can't really define it. It's like, oh, he's going to attack this guy and it's going to be definitive. He's going to attack with strength and this is
with force. And
right. Caravan does that. When I watched him in the last, even in the against Michigan, it's like, oh, he's really trying to create space off the ball with using, having his teammates set a screen, and that shot's going up. And maybe he's not making them early on, but he's going to keep shooting it because he hasn't lost confidence. And he understands that, hey, these are going to drop eventually. And you, later on in the game against Michigan, they did. And he has the right mental approach to that level of competition and pressure that you can't really, you know, find out of prospects. When we watch prospects, it's always, what do they do on the floor? It's never really about, well, how did they approach this game? Oh, it's a quality opponent. Oh, he's going to do this thing because he knows what he's good at. And that's what he's going to go execute. And I tend to find that veteran teams like younger players that are predictable in the sense that he's my teammate. He does this one thing. We could set him up for that one thing. And he won't deter from it. He won't cower down from it. That shot will go up. And I trust it. I think that's what Caravan does. So in terms of defensive schemes, maybe you have to hide him a little.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a tweener between both forward positions. But at the same time, like Terrace Reed, he's played more complicated defensive schemes. And it's not like he hasn't found clever ways to try to buy himself a step or two just by leaning in a certain way. So that's Alex Caravan in a nutshell for me.
All right, Mike, next up is a guy that I think is the shortest player that you've ever sent me on a list of, hey, I like this guy and think we might consider him in the second round. Point guard out of Purdue, Braden Smith.
So Braden Smith breaks my own rule about guards. What my rule is, oh, I think your standing range needs to be 8'5 or more.
Yeah, I was stunned when I looked him up. I was like, I got to hear about this guy because this is so anti what Mike would normally be into.
What you would like about Braden Smith is he's a floor general and he knows what he's doing on the floor. You can't really quantify that. You see a point guard get a ball out of bounds and they're just standing. They get the ball, then they move up. No, Braden Smith gets the ball on the run because he's trying to get downhill. He's trying to run his offense early. He gets to the half court area. One of the biggest games that I watched this season was Purdue against Michigan. Like I said, lottery front line. Purdue won. How did they win? They switch Mara onto Braden Smith, put him in a pick and roll situation, get Mara to switch, and then Braden Smith's just burying multiple mid-range shots over Mara because Mara can't keep up with the quickness and he has to space him. Oh, Mara levels up. Okay, well, Braden Smith's going to hit a three. He knows what to do on ball. He knows what to do off ball. He distributes the ball well. It's not like he's afraid of attacking the paint. He just knows his limitations and he's not super turnover prone. This goes back to the high IQ, high skill, high character. I mean, you can't sound like we're in the timeouts, but it's very clear. Oh, no, that's the guy for Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
That's the engine. And he's the reason that they're successful. So, no, he doesn't meet my usual requirements of what I'm looking for in a guard, what the NBA thinks of success or whatever else it might be. But if there was an end of bench guy that you kind of want, you want a guy with moxie.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to do this. This is what they're going to do against me. I'll find a way around it. And like, he's that kind of mentally tough that you can't really teach.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate that too. Not just the skill and the athleticism, but all these other things. And I think a championship team needs that kind of guy on the bench too.
No, absolutely. And very McConnell-esque is as you describe him. I want to cheat a little bit here and hop back to the first round and talk about a smaller guard real quick. Because again, in just my blink draft research, this was a guy that jumped off the screen. Again, not in the archetype that I was looking for, but I've seen him in a couple of mock drafts close enough to look for. Guard out of Stanford that blew my mind, Abuka Okoro. My God, that dude can score from every possible angle, off of every shot, off of movement. And if I was not thinking, hey, you know, a 6'2 guard was not on my radar, but if that kid's anywhere in our vicinity, I think, like, go get him because he's going to be scoring. I was just off the charts impressed with his ability.
I think Jeannie put you up to this, and that's totally fine because I have no problem.
She absolutely did not. Our wonderful producer, Jeannie, is a Stanford fan. But no, she did not put me up to this, had nothing to do with it. But nonetheless, holy crap.
As I've mentioned earlier, there's always players that are ranked really high, and I'll be like, no, they should be ranked lower. And some guys are ranked lower, and I drafted really high. I think Okoro is a lottery level talent. I think he's
okay. Yeah.
Off the top of my head, he's probably 6 foot and a half without shoes and 6'5", 6'6", arms, whatever else it might be. Mid 30%, 3-point shooter. I think it's around 35. Here's the thing. When I watch guards, I usually look for the one thing that they do best. What does Okoro do best? He breaks down defenses, first level, sometimes second level. Is there even a third level? Not with Okoro, right? Because usually he's too fast. He has shake. He's quick. He's fast. He likes to get out and transition. And he doesn't need to be a set shooter. Like, you know how some shooters are rigid with their upper body? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, I need to get my... Like, when I watch Rui, he's very like this where it's like, oh, if my upper body isn't completely upright and I'm leaning one way or the other, okay, well, I'm leaning, it's not going to be good.
I think this really influences shot volume a lot, like how many shots you can get up in the first place. Is that for Rui, I think that's an advantage, and part of the reason why he's got such a phenomenally high percentage is that he is so consistent with how he shoots, but there is sort of a rigidity with the type of shots that he can get up. A guy like Okoro was just flinging it from all sorts of angles.
In regards to Rui, it's like, oh, you want your role players to shoot in the phone booth so they could be accurate, right? Makes sense if they're open. And then when it's the creators, it's like, oh, I want you to have all the kind of versatility and touch that you can get so we can get this shot up. And defenses have sagged, and then he'll pull up from mid-range. They'll have him leaning and spin away one direction or the other. Like, he'll find a creative way to do it. He'll do pull-up threes off the dribble. Okay, 35%. That's what I saw. And he shoots him above. And it's with comfort. A lot of the low ranking comes from several areas. One was, oh, well, he shoots like 57% at the rim, somewhere around that area. And then in my mind, it's like, well, it's a 6'2 guard, and he broke down the rest of the defense. And he's probably meeting one or two defenders at the rim because that's the only guy that they have to guard on, you know? So I think that's actually good. Mm. Layup percentage doesn't directly translate to NBA layup percentage. Like, there is no direct correlation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen players where it's like, oh, this guard shoots 40% at the rim collegiate level. I think Jeremiah Fears was like really low. And I'm like, I think he's better in the NBA level now. Nobody's saying anything about it. Okoro does the thing where he's special in terms of breaking down a defense. The downside is, I don't know where he is in terms of passing reads. I really don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe it's the quality of, you know, teammates or wherever else he might be. And I think he came in with the approach on offense like, oh, I got to find a way to dive on my way to Iraq again. And it's like that every time that the floor. Now, he's special at it. It's the hardest skill to teach, really, because he's doing multiple decisions on the dribble, seeing multiple defense. And there's been a couple times where I've seen teams like shut him down. But I'm like, you double and triple team this guy so up high that he had to give up the ball. Like, and he's still trying to, you know, force the issue.
Absolutely. That's part of the thought process too for me, Mike, with the Lakers is, even though that's not something I had in mind in the first place, is if you put him around other talent, they're not going to be able to guard him in that same way. And I think he's just absolutely cook.
It gets to a point where it's like, oh, this particular skill is so great and so rare that I will forgive some defensive lapses or, you know, understanding or execution or whatever, because I mean, he's still a small guard. I will forgive maybe some of the off-ball ability because it's more limited than I'd like it to be. Like Brandon Smith, I don't worry about him off-ball. When it's Okoro, it's like, okay, I worry about him a little bit, but you know, Brandon Smith's like a senior, like he knows what he's doing. I draft that special skill. Okay, we've seen this player before, just so you know. We've seen him in Tier Brown. And you haven't heard that name in a while.
Not in a long time, no.
But here's the thing. Okoro's shake is more dynamic, and he gets the rim. Tier Brown had the issue, like, his shots were short at the rim. Okoro has touch, and you can't really teach it, especially when a player's on the move. So I'm not concerned about that at all. And I think the other things when it comes to passing reads, maybe he only does one or two reads ahead of time on his drives. But if you want a guy to break down your defense, that's your guy.
Yeah, he's special at that. Thank you for humoring me on a first-round pick. Let's go to break here, wrap up the second-round picks and sleepers on Mike's mind, and then I'd love to get his thoughts on the Lakers' offseason.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race?
a rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
All right, Mike, tell us about Dylan Mitchell.
Dylan Mitchell. I'm pausing because I think you're going to hesitate, but I wouldn't hesitate. Dylan Mitchell is basically wing-size Vanderbilt, and in both positive and negative ways.
When you say wing-size, so like 6'6 type of?
I have him from the combine as, 6'6 3/4, 8'8.5 standing reach, so basically the standing reach of almost a power forward, which is a big deal in his case. 6'10.5 wingspan. And he's 202 pounds. But here's the thing about Dylan Mitchell. When we watch Vanderbilt play defense or offense, I find that his movements are kind of like really twitchy in a sense that he always looks rushed one way or another. And then sometimes he can just harness it in enough to do something productive defensively. And it's also great that he's twitchy like that because if he's reacting to something, he reacts instantaneously. And then he can move along with the player that he's trying to mirror. Mitchell is a smoother athlete with better body control. So you're not getting that kind of twitchiness, but when you're thinking about a player that can play good man defense on a wing, can force turnovers, he was a great partner for Zubi Ejiofor at St. John's as even a little bit of a rim protector as well. It's like, okay, great. Well, here's this wing defender. The thing is, he's not a shooter, and to the level that I don't think he's a shooter to Vanderbilt's level. Now, my counter argument against this is when I do see him attack the hoop and he shoots layups around the rim, he does it with finesse and touch. I don't see that out of Jared Vanderbilt's shots around the rim. But when it comes to shooting in general, I mean, last year at the free throw line, he was just under 50% at the free throw line. He's 66% around the rim, which is legit. It's like, okay, well, if we get him downhill and maybe there's a defender, like I trust him to finish to some ability, but anywhere else on the court, even that free throw line area, I just wouldn't expect him to shoot in those general areas. So once again, it's one of those cases where, oh, we need to teach this guy how to shoot. The Lakers could go a couple ways here where it's like, let's get Trayvon Brazil because he can already shoot and he was the Rose teammate, and they're familiar with each other. Okay, great. Or we drafted Zubi at 25 because we thought he was the best guy, and let's get his defensive partner, and let's develop both of their shooting with the same guy, and we know that they can get to the certain point. When it's Zubi and Mitchell, it's like, oh, you've got like two-thirds of your front line. That's an all-defensive, at least conference-level front line. So I like what he does defensively. He makes good decisions on offense. He moves the ball. He's not timid. I don't know how else to say that. He cuts. He knows that he needs to spot up for spacing purposes, but there's nothing, there's no gravity behind it, at least not yet. And the only player that I've seen shoot these kind of free throw percentages and actually become a successful three-point shooter, even into the playoffs, was Bruce Bowen. That's my one outlier case. I mean, go Kelsey Fullerton, but I would like my rings from San Antonio. Thanks.
Speaking of Bruce, one last guy on our list, Mike, Bruce Thornton.
Who is the wing player that was recently drafted on Utah that you liked last year or 2 years ago?
I didn't really like Sensabaugh. Do you think I liked Sensabaugh?
I thought you liked Sensabaugh because of his offense.
Oh, I mean, he can shoot the shit out of the ball for sure. And he could score the hell out of the ball.
So when it comes to Bruce Thornton, he reminds me of Bryce Sensabaugh in the sense that here's this kind of 1v1 ISO footwork drill guard that can create his own shot along the perimeter and just be absurdly accurate. When I say absurdly, once again, I'm going from memory, but my Rolodex, it spits out numbers. They'll be close. 68% at the rim. 58% long two. Over 40% arc shooting. And he's a stocky guard. So there's this impression of like, oh, if someone's going to be physical against him, well, he's kind of like a fire hydrant. So maybe he can compete well on that end. My concern is he's not an explosive player. He's just like this big guard who's like a really accurate shooter and do this, you know, one dribble, two dribble, pull up. Oh, he's in the paint. He got an offensive board. He has like soft touch in the paint. It's hard to explain, but he has like great extension. So he's kind of, in a sense, a microwave scorer. I don't know how this translates to the next level because I keep thinking, oh, there's going to be a guard that's like a little bit taller and maybe you're stronger than him, but I don't know if you're going to get the same shot or at least the same look. But in any case, he's the number one option for his team and he's been so insanely accurate as a shooter all three levels that it's kind of hard to turn it down. If I'm looking at, okay, second round to undrafted, I'm pretty sure he's really going to get drafted early, like early 30s.
Got it.
Like a team's going to give him a chance. But if he happens to slip and the Lakers like got their guy in the first round and they're like, oh, no, we want someone who's a shooter and we don't worry about any spot on the floor. He could just get a shot. That would be the guy.
Love it. Mike, thank you so much for the draft. Any like closing thoughts about this draft you want to share before we talk about the Lakers a little bit?
Before I get to that, I have one question. Have you looked at any of the top picks?
Yes. I've watched Ibanza a bit and was very impressed by him. But I think I watched him a little more in high school, more of his high school footage than his past season at BYU. Darren Peterson is, you know, a guy whose nickname is DNP. I'm old enough now to it really stick in my craw. And there was just enough weirdness about him that I did not like. But man, is that guy a talented, talented player that, if you disregard the sort of concerns that I have from watching from afar, like just incredibly talented guy. And I haven't watched Boozer, though. I haven't watched the Boozer Boys.
The reason why I'm asking is because I was just curious who your guy is for number one. Like, mine is Peterson. And I just think he kind of like maybe comes off a little bit aloof because he's quiet during his interviews. And yet he's really focused on who he is and how he practices and all these other things. He's focused in a way that when I watch player interviews, like, no, I think this is your life, man. Like, I don't think you look at anything else. And when I saw that, I'm like, this could go one or two ways. But
okay, so this is the difference between someone who knows what the hell they're talking about and someone who doesn't, which is you and me, right? And I'm the second one. The this is your life thing, when I see, like, isn't he checking himself out of games? Isn't he missing games because, oh, I have a hangnail? Like, that's my understanding of his reputation, is that he is super unreliable. And that's my biggest concern with him, just is when looking at top level prospects, is do those guys like have the personality you want to build around, and will they be reliable in that way?
So I totally get those concerns because I had the same exact ones. And then I read an article about like, oh, he dealt with injury this year and it wasn't a typical thing. It even surprised him. And what threw me off was the archetype that he played in college isn't the same he played in high school. In high school, he was the lead guard and he was a rim threat and he was killing Dibanza. And that threw me off. And then his team won, right? And Dibanza went on against him, like, defensively and couldn't contain him either. So
he's too tall to be able to guard him. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, well, he's my hypothetical number one. And then I looked into the interviews and all this other stuff. And it's one of those things that needs to be kind of discerned through the interview and the workout process and all the medical reports and everything else, because I'm thinking everything else clears. And even if he played in an archetype that wasn't him in high school, and he was really successful, because what threw me off was, oh, he got 24 points and a half. I'm like, who gets 24 points and a half? Usually you see that like once a year. But no, he did like 18 and a half, 24 and a half. He got 13 in the quarter. I've never seen a score flurry like that from the same player, like multiple games, and then he doesn't look 100%. Oh, I would sit this guy a year. Because if I could get this guy healthy.
Oh, Mike's in love. Mike's in love. Hey, I get it, man. No, he's super talented guy, man. Yeah, that's just my impression from afar is that that personality stuff. Mike, one last question about this Lakers offseason. I would love to talk to you more on the pod on non-draft topics, because you've been very influential on me in a number of ways. And one of them is reverse engineering from a closing five. The idea of the primacy of a closing five, something I get from you. I'd love your thoughts on the Lakers offseason through that lens. What do you want the Lakers closing five to look like at the end of this offseason?
So for me, this offseason is an order of operations. And I know that's very delicate in terms of cap, in terms of draft, in terms of acquisition, who to trade, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, all that is beyond me. What my approach would be is, hey, the Lakers need an anchor. Let's just start with an anchor. If Luke is going to be a king, he needs a castle to kind of run. And I would like the anchor to be the castle so he could go protect it. And if that anchor is done through free agency, great. If it's done by trade, great. Are there going to be centers that are in restricted free agency that are considered higher risk because they didn't have the greatest playoffs? Yeah. Do the Lakers take that risk? I have more grace. I keep thinking, hey, this kid is 21, 22, 23. Yeah. If he's that young and he had a bad series, okay, well, let's...
I'm totally with you on this, Mike. I think the number the Lakers would have to offer him to get him out of Detroit would be high. I just struggled to build the rest of the team after that. And I don't think highly enough of him to, like, do you pay him 40? Do you pay him the high 30s? You know, that's sort of where I'm at with him, while totally sharing your perspective about, like, it's one playoff series, and we've seen this over and over again throughout player careers, is guys have to taste their own blood sometimes, and then they improve off of that.
Right. At the same time, I look at the center market, and I'm just like, it's not the most appealing center market. So what I think the Lakers need to do is figure out what is their price range for each of these players, and then make a plan like, oh, if we got this restricted free agent, how do we fill the roster with the remaining money? If we got this guy, how does it look? And then it's a decision-making process with the entire front office about who they delineate from there on out. But priority for one for me is still, you need an anchor. And then on top of that, it's like, we just need athleticism. I don't care what position it's at, right? Preferably the guy's wing size. If Kelly Oubre is available, great. Yeah. That guy's got 72 arms. You know, I mean, I'm at the point where it's Luka and it's Reeves and their value is so positive on the floor, especially offensively. It's like, can we get just like a neutral guy or just a slightly negative guy where the positivity will just outrank that so much that it won't matter? This is what throws me off. Luka makes centers look so good. What happened to Derek Lively this year? He got hurt. Mm-hmm. Did he look the same even when he was healthy? What about Gafford? Did he look the same? Right? No. And Gafford looked great in Washington too. But did he look the same without Luka? Kind of not. So there's this part of me that's kind of like, well, yeah, the Lakers might overpay for a center, but man, Luka's going to make him look really good. And maybe that finished product of what Luka makes him look like is that contract. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I agree with you in terms of value. Because, hey, Ayton's contract right now, as great as Luka made him look, like, that's like, it occurred to me that the Lakers spent $10 million between two centers, basically. And they got a lot of production out of that.
A lot of bang for your buck, but they also, there is a bit of a knife to a gunfight element once you get to the highest levels of basketball.
Right. I totally agree with you, but at the same time, it's one of those things where if Luka can't elevate a wing like he can a center, and would say the Lakers are looking at someone like Payton Watson, is he worth that contract number versus a center worth that contract number?
Versus center. Mm-hmm. Totally agree. Yeah.
I weigh those things too. So order of operations, look at a defensive-oriented center. I'm looking at centers in the draft. I just want to get as much size and athleticism that we could get at that five spot. If the Lakers have to develop them, great. If it's the Coachella Valley Lakers route, a version of dream scenario is, hey, we got Vesar because he's a rim threat and he can shoot threes. We have offensive flexibility. Oh, hey, we also got Brazil. So now we'll just play two bigs, even though they're really young. Like, there's this idea of, oh, we got the switchable four who's, like, really big. And then who's a rim threat and a three-point threat. And then Vesar does that too. And he's a drop coverage guy. Now it kind of like makes sense with added size. So let's start at five.
This has been great, Mike. Thanks so much. Where can people find your work and your thoughts?
I haven't written a lot, but still write on lakersdraft.substack.com. But if you follow me on Canyon Driver and I find a topic that I feel kind of really passionate about, I'll usually do a whole tweet thread or whatever about a player or whatever else it might be. Just find me at those places. And if you have a question, feel free to ask. I appreciate all the fans. And the new subscribers have been very shocking, and all the readers and all the questions. It's always welcome, and I always do appreciate it.
And we appreciate you, Mike, man. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. Darius and I will be back on Monday to talk some NBA finals. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is lobbed. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.